gentlemen. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Interesting stats when you look at the support of Catholics and Donald Trump, which seems to be diminishing significantly, and overwhelming support on the Hillary Clinton side of the fence. Now, you could ask, is this because of the traditional appeal of the Democrat Party to Catholics? Is this because of an aversion to Donald Trump? What exactly is happening here? And I think that as I posted this on Facebook and got some responses, the question is, well, why would that many Catholics support a pro-abortion politician? And all of this has merit. All of these questions have merit. And I think these are things that we have to ask more questions about and think about and discuss more. So we'll be doing that this afternoon. Also taking a look at Mother Teresa as we approach closer and closer her date of canonization. Just a beautiful example of what it means, the role of women in the church. And I think that that is often debated, so we'll talk about that. And Zuckerberg and Pope Francis, what's up with this meeting? All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Following politics, of course, closely in this election cycle, and interesting things that we see between Donald Trump and Catholics. Of course, we know that there was that now infamous, perhaps, question asked of Pope Francis on the flight back from where had he been visiting at the time? I'm trying to recall which trip that was. And basically about building the wall. I think it was when he was in South America. Does that make sense? Was it in a trip? Was it his World Youth Day trip? No, it wouldn't have been that long ago. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. And he said, someone who builds walls, someone who's looking to do this kind of thing, this isn't Christian, right? That's what he said. And of course, to the ire of many who say, how dare the Pope enter politics? I had this conversation with a friend recently after Mass, who felt like that the homily was veering too far into political challenges, perhaps a rhetoric all its own. And yeah, I think that we have to be politically active as people of faith, no question. But we don't want our politics to dictate our faith. That's, as you know, what I call politism and Catholics. Right? If your faith life is your politics, which to many it is, or let's put it this way, to enough it is, enough that it's a problem, enough that I've seen it and thought, wow, you know what? This, We need to look at policy, principles, platforms. Let's do that. Let's not just say party line all the time. It's just not why. There's no prudence in that. If that's what we're doing, if we're saying we're liberal, Democrat all the way, or Republican all the way, I think we've just done something to discredit ourselves as Catholics. We've eliminated, and this is kind of how I explained it in a Facebook post recently, for lack of a better way. I think that the Catholic perspective politically is not this broad, massive, anything goes. It's four principles. I mean, really, that's it. It's four basic, this is what it is. which we could look at if we wanted to. We could say there's four sides to this square, which imagine that. There's four sides to every square, but there's four sides of the square that, as I see it, become a window or a doorway, perhaps a better way of looking at it, a doorway in. And there's a couple of hinges on that door as well that allow that thing to swing. And that hinge, let's say it's one big hinge, right? Seeing some of these compartments that are hinged by one continuous hinge from top to bottom on the door. So let's say that door, that hinge on the door is literally one of those, a solid hinge. And that hinge is human dignity. So that side that supports the opening is it, that has to be that's the primacy. We talked about this. What comes first? And in this case, it's the hinge upon the door, upon which the door can swing. It is human dignity. You look around on the other four areas of this interestingly square door. We have elements such as the common good, subsidiarity, solidarity. So if I were to illustrate this, I think effectively for me to get it, I see the hinge being human dignity, the opposite side of that, the parallel, running parallel, right? Not opposite. I think that's not an effective way of explaining this, but the parallel track to human dignity is the common good. Then if you look at the top and bottom, those two elements that run parallel, solidarity, subsidiarity. And I think seeing that and to say, okay, now there's only so much that will fit through this door. And political parties that are so off the charts and so out of touch with those four components, it can't fit in. Cannot fit in. And unfortunately, there's not a party at this point there could be something emerging, we'll see, that would actually say we're going to fit perfectly through that. Because you know what? We value those four components as well. But if you look at Democrats and Republicans, it doesn't fit. Can't fit. So you got to vote on those principles. And you got to realize where the hinge is on human dignity. Because there are those who say there's a primacy to human life, which I agree, but it's the primacy of human dignity. That's why we're pro-life. We got to understand that. If we understand that and we can allow that hinge to hold that door securely on its opening, now we have the opportunity. Well, this is primary. A hinge is primary to a door, right? You don't put a door up and then try to get it to swing on a hinge. You got to have the hinge for the door to swing upon. So hopefully that illustration brings something into focus that we realize what we're talking about, and maybe we can understand why we're seeing some of these numbers. I posted this on my Facebook page from the Washington Post. Donald Trump has a massive Catholic problem. Aaron Blake is writing this article with some statistics from the Public Religion Research Institute, showing Clinton ahead by 55% versus 32% for Catholics. Washington Post, ABC News poll, 61% versus 34% for Catholics. And this is kind of, I think, some would look at this and say, as they have, and I understand, how dare they vote for a pro-abortion politician who will undoubtedly appoint liberal justices. Now, it's true, there are those who I know don't want to hear this or say, well, it has nothing to do with the policies of a pro-abort, and you could argue that, I understand, and I'm willing to have that conversation. But it is true that abortions have declined in the past 8 years under the Obama administration. Now, why is that? I think there was tremendous fear that because of the pledge of President Obama to Planned Parenthood that we were going to see just massive uptick in abortion access, therefore abortion even more rampant than what it had been. And that isn't the case. We've had more closings of abortuaries in the past 8 years, probably. I'm just shooting from the hip on this, so don't hold me to it. But I would say it maybe haven't seen that many in a long time. I know there's been enough. There's been a significant number. So all of this to say, it's not necessarily who's in the seat of president. I've never believed that. I think the job of president is important, but you know, if you look at the 40 some odd years since Roe v. Wade, and you look at the, I don't know what the numbers, how it plays out exactly, but there has been a majority conservatively led administrations in the year since 1973, a majority conservative administration, number of administrations. We still have not had any sweeping legislation or judicial action that would say Roe v. Wade is gone. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen it with the number of conservative justices who have been appointed to the court. We certainly didn't see it with the, and some would say, well, it was because Scalia wasn't on the court, but you know, we had a tie vote. Yes, Scalia probably would have turned it, no doubt, but on the recent legislation regarding the decisions in Texas, right? We know that we had issues there that have kept that court order to not close the abortuaries open. So I don't think there's any guarantee. We can't say that we're going to get this person and they're going to do everything perfectly. And I do believe, at least for most of the Catholics that I've discussed this with, there's a very clear understanding that there is nothing's perfect. But then there's this simple focus on pro-life, and those who say they're pro-life, those who profess a pro-life stance, that's all you need to have to say, okay, I'm all in. I'm in. I'm good. That's all I needed to hear. And I would question that, because if that's all you need to hear, then essentially, what if Hillary Clinton came out tomorrow and said, oh, yeah, you know, all that stuff I said before, I'm solidly pro-life. Then where's your support go? Right? I think we got to think about that. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. And we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Coming up soon, and very soon, the canonization date for Mother Teresa. I've talked about Blessed Teresa of Calcutta a number of times over the years as being that Just an interesting attraction point. Yes, she was an attraction point because I found her so amazingly attractive before becoming Catholic. And, you know, I was a young adult, I guess, in the, I say that like I have to hesitate, like, was I really an adult? Right. Was I there? Could I claim that as someone in my young, as a young 20 something, watching this woman make the impact she made? But I remember thinking, wow, right? That she, yeah, and I didn't even, no way did I know the full dynamic of who she was. I didn't even realize she was Catholic. I've talked about that before. I didn't even know what Catholicism really was, knew nothing about her devotion, her faith life. All I knew is that she was challenging status quo like crazy. And I was, that was obvious. And she got the world's attention for doing it. And especially because, you know, I was at a point then when I was kind of experimenting with a lot of ideologies, philosophies. And so I had looked enough into Hinduism because I was fascinated by Hinduism. I was fascinated by Buddhism and, you know, Eastern religions. And I thought that there was really something to going, what I hoped to find was a pre-Christian history, which I don't know. I never looked into the Jewish faith. I could have done that, but I didn't do that. I just seemed like that was off limits, but I kind of thought like I could embrace some Hindu, embrace some of the Buddhist practices. And, you know, the interesting thing that I found is this concept of karma. And, you know, when you get to this caste system of India and the belief that you kind of get what you deserve, but you can't really, there's no way of earning it, or it just, you get what you get, right? It is what it is. There's no changing that. And the karmic realities are that, especially in the concept of reincarnation, is you can try all you want and it really doesn't matter. You might come back and have to do your life again and it be no better than it was before, or you might get to be a cow, right? I mean, that's kind of the way it works. You don't know. And for those in this caste system of being on the lower strata and karma frowning upon you repeatedly to the point that all you do is come back in poverty and sickness, too bad for you. That's just the way it is. And for Mother Teresa to step into that and say, this has got to change. We're not going to walk over these individuals who are dying in the streets. We're going to pick them up. We're going to care for them. We're going to find ways to change that. It was so interesting to see that challenge to the status quo. And again, even though I found elements of Hinduism attractive, I found more Buddhist practices attractive than that of Hinduism, but I still had a respect for it. But it was seeing this challenge even to that that was so interesting to me. And so Mother Teresa, aside from St. Paul, who I have kind of had at least some degree of recognition of my entire life as even early on as a Christian, in a Christian household growing up, understanding who the Apostle Paul was, but really no devotion to him, no desire to emulate him. Actually, at the same time I was admiring Mother Teresa, I was probably questioning the overzealous approach of St. Paul. And I remember even having this conversation with my dad, who was a Baptist and a devout substitute preacher in our church, never ordained a minister, but had the speaking skills to be able to get up and lead a church service. I remember having this conversation with him saying, you know, I just don't get where this Apostle Paul guy got so crazy. You know, Jesus had a really good concept, and then this guy seemed to take it and just wreck it. I thought that. So interestingly enough, can't really claim him with the same appreciation as I have of Mother Teresa. And when I look at her life, look at what she accomplished, and now as we head toward canonization, just beautiful. And John Allen is John L. Allen, I guess I should say, that's how he identifies himself, of Crux, talking about this. I posted this over on my Facebook page, but just the contributions of what it looks like to be merciful. He talks about this, the apologetics in action, that this is how you defend the church, by doing something, right? You don't give a dissertation and talk somebody's head off and then expect them to go, well, yeah, well, there's some validity here. No, you know where the validity comes? It's when they see you in action and they go, wow, this is the real deal. She did that. Women in the church, we see that she was prominently revered. And I think that these are all really, any of this is something to appreciate about her. But one of the quotes that he mentions here in this piece is about, well, I guess it's not necessarily a quote of hers. It's just referring to her life. And he says, Mother Teresa offers the valuable example, that you don't really need deep pockets or massive infrastructure to get something done, only the relentless will to make it happen. And you know, I think that's another amazing example of this beautiful woman's life, that she didn't have an international organization. She had a ministry in Calcutta, and because she made such a deep impact there, that epicenter of experience that was happening changed the world. And she got the attention of all kinds of individuals, especially when she got the Nobel Peace Prize. This, of course, propelled her to a kind of a level of celebrity. But she was consistent in always exceeding the expectations. Wherever she went, addressing crowds, the humility that she had in accepting accommodations when she traveled, you name it. And then you read about her and you see that she struggled with these doubts and questions. I mean, how legit does it have to get, right? I mean, it's amazing. So when we see her approaching canonization, it's exciting. And I think of the many who have experienced her over the years personally, actually went and worked with her. I've had conversations with many individuals who have had the pleasure of meeting her. And it's just a beautiful opportunity to really exemplify the church at her best, right? This is what it should look like. It's great to have a canonization of a missionary priest or a pope or you name it, but when you've got a humble nun working actively in a community to change, to break the stereotypes and systemically, that from the stem, that from the root, that which has been a challenge for as long as anyone can remember, to come in and say, no, we're going to do this differently, and to stick it out and to do it, and then to have such an impact that the world begins to see what you're doing. That's a powerful lesson. It's a beautiful lesson. Not just a beautiful lesson for women in the church or religious, but again, that relentless will, that desire to work within the will of God, to really embrace that grace that's offered and take it and run with it and really let it just amplify. Like our Blessed Mother says, you know, it's that magnification that can happen, that God's will through our humility, of his will becoming our will, it's amplified. I have to believe that's what we see in the example of Mother Teresa, and that's why we're about to canonize her here in a couple of weeks. And exciting stuff. I always had the dream that I would be at St. Peter's for both the canonization of Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa. But, you know, we got to have our dreams, even if they don't come true at times. But we can all celebrate from where we are, as we are this day and age, with instant connection to immediate access of real-time videos and the things that will be a part of this. So it's exciting. So Blessed Mother Teresa, pray for us. Certainly as we move toward this time of canonization, maybe our focus will become a little bit more on what we can do, what we can do and what we've been called to do to really bring about the will of God in our lives. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, on this hour. Culture, current events, or Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook. You'll see the many things we discuss and also many things we don't discuss that sometimes get discussion over there. So if you like to discuss, you can do that on my Facebook page. Always welcomed. Trolls, welcome. Right? Come on in and troll. Troll away. That's fine. We'll still have a conversation. And I will still respect you. May not agree with you, but I hopefully will show you respect. I strive for that. Let's put it that way. May not always come out that way, especially if you disagree. It's easy to be offended with that with which we disagree, right? We got to realize that. So if you disagree with me, you may be offended, but I promise you, I will do everything imaginable to be respectful. So come on in, Leo C. Brown. Ban on swimming with dolphins is proposed. Apparently these creatures are nocturnal in nature, and so they're out there lounging around trying to sleep, and people get out there in the bay and they swim around with them, or wherever they happen to be, Hawaii. So the porpoise proposal is underway to consider not allowing swimming with the dolphins again. We'll see where that leads. Good and bad news out of Indonesia with a would-be bomber failing to complete the task, but there were those injured in the attack with an axe-wielding would-be suicide bomber who did wield the axe but did not detonate the bombs in a Catholic church in Indonesia. So it's interesting what we're seeing now, because I think we know that there's been more than coincidental situations happening in Catholic churches. Now, this goes all the way back, mind you. Do the research on this, and you will see that Boko Haram was very active, has been. I wouldn't say was, like it's over, but has been and continues to be active in the targeting of Catholic churches. Certainly in various parts of Africa, Nigeria comes to mind immediately, and this is nothing new, certainly on the African continent, but perhaps something we haven't seen as much of across the globe, but now with the slaying of the French priest, this Indonesian attack, I think it's obvious that it's not just the Muslims that ISIS disagrees with who are targeted, but also, and especially so, Catholics. ISIS taking credit for a weekend bombing at a wedding in Iraq, and we know about this because it was on the front page of every news source at their on their website, right? No, this doesn't make news. Nor did this. It was an ABC news story, but it wasn't a lot. But certainly when it's Iraq, that's Iraq. That just happens all the time. As if it's no big deal, they kind of brush it off. That unfortunately is happening and has happened when it comes down to the Middle East, the attacks in the Middle East. But we need to recognize the dignity of each and every human individual and understand that this is, it's not about just what happens in the Western world or just what happens to Europeans and Americans. So hopefully we would have a place of prayer and condolence in our heart for those who lost their lives in this fatal attack in Iraq over the weekend. Arrest has been made in the fatal stabbing of the two nuns of Mississippi. We'll see where this leads. It appears as though it was a home invasion robbery scenario. I still think that there are sketchy details, but there has been an arrest made. Certainly not seeming terrorist related or anything of that nature, but an unfortunate individual with a long rap sheet recently let out of prison, and now the prime suspect arrested in connection with this attack. So we'll see where it leads. Other interesting news over at my Facebook page, the Abrahamic religions, clothing is vital and trivial. Interestingly enough, from The Economist. Of course, much debate over the burqa ban on the beaches of France. And the question is, well, what happens when it comes to nuns? And then we get a look at, is there something to this idea of what we wear having a religious implication? And there is certainly the case when it comes to a tradition of the Abrahamic faiths, Jewish, Muslim, and Christian, that absolutely there is something to this. And we have to realize and ideally respect that. And I think that this is really a step in the wrong direction and a backward step for any beach to say any particular type of clothing is banned. Now, I could understand them saying you need to have clothing, right? Go to certain places in Florida, South Beach, Miami, perhaps you won't see a lot of that. The European mindset is, hey, well, not the European mindset as much as the, I think it's the South Americans that come there as well, but it's kind of like, yeah, you know, we're on the beach. Anything goes. But, which is the reason why we have family in Miami, but now as my children are getting older, I'm thinking, we'll just vacation up in Hollywood or on up north a little bit in Lauderdale. a little bit safer as far as the exposure there. So, but we got to realize that there is a history, a tradition, and something that needs to be defended, and we can't simply steamroll through over individuals who may not have our particular ethics when it comes to the way we do things. But we can't fear that and say, well, they don't need to be here. How dare they? That's not cool. Don't dress that way here because you offend us. Stretching, pushing, and unfortunately going in the wrong direction. So that story over at my Facebook page. Also, we'll know a whole lot more in a couple of days, and we'll talk about this when we know more. But Donald Trump now may be changing his stance on deportations, or at least his stance on immigration. We've heard a lot discussed in this presidential election so far when it comes to what to do with those who are illegal. There has been a proposal of mass deportations. We know the wall is being proposed. We talked about this earlier in the response that we saw from Pope Francis regarding this. it'll be interesting to see. We'll get a couple of days here, and Donald Trump will be making his campaign stop in Phoenix, pretty sure that's the town in Arizona where he'll be making presenting his outline for immigration reform. And what we pray, even if we don't agree with his politics, is that he will respect the dignity of all individuals, right? That's kind of back to what we talked about earlier. If you're going to fit through this door, which is a very specifically sized door, right? I think that's what's interesting. It's not so much about, it's dimension. It's specifically dimensioned. And if something is outside of that perfect dimension of this door, it will not fit in. And human dignity, one side of the door, the hinge of the door, and mass deportations really don't fit in that understanding of human dignity. Now, one could argue, and I had this conversation earlier with someone about the ICE report, right? The immigration control, what is it? You know what I'm talking about, ICE.org, representing a report from 2014 that shows the vast majority, 85% of deportations, were in relation to crime, that being the crimes that Donald Trump outlined in his famous speech of rapists, murderers, and drug dealers. Well, those are the crimes, apparently, that represent the 85%. Now, another question is, just because this represents 85%, does that mean 85% of illegal immigrants are doing this? I don't think so. I think that's a very unfair assessment to say this has to correlate. I don't think it's a correlation. I think the correlation is these individuals were doing this, therefore they were deported. They were caught. They were caught and they were discovered to be illegal immigrants. If these were Americans, they would be jailed, but because they're illegal, they can be deported. And that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a dynamic of approach, because how else does ICE know about illegal immigrants being here? It has to be something else to represent that 25%. The general ways that they would discover, maybe through some sort of tip or raid that they would do on a particular business that seems to be hiring illegals, whatever, you could find those connections. But if it has to do with crime, undoubtedly it must be, because we're talking about criminals, right? That just happen to be illegal. So lots to think about there. We'll find out more of Trump's positions on Wednesday, and we'll talk about that. Back tomorrow afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.